Welcome to Anime's Lit. I'm Kay.
I'm Danny.
This is a podcast where we talk about anime like it's literature, except fun and not boring, and except this time we're just going to talk about a con that we went to.
Yesterday we got back from KomoriCon 2018, which is kind of our like home court con.
Yeah.
Because it's in Portland.
It's the closest one to us.
Yeah. So we always go every year, and it's like, it's not huge, but it's a decent sized small con. So usually we don't get very high profile guests, but this year we got Yoshitaka Amano, courtesy of Dark Horse Manga, because they are based near Portland.
Apparently most people know Yoshitaka Amano from Final Fantasy, because he's done a lot of character design and a lot of illustration for that. We only knew him from Angel's Egg, which is apparently one of his lesser known things.
Yeah, like I was aware, like peripherally aware of other projects he'd done, but like though I did not grow up with Final Fantasy.
I didn't either.
Or things like Vampire Hunter D and stuff that he's like pretty well known for. It surprises me that like people who know Final Fantasy are so familiar with his name and like who he is, because I only kind of vaguely associate the two. But anyway, the reason why we wanted to do kind of a bonus episode about it is because like we just came out of that convention, for one thing, really just kind of jazzed and kind of invigorated and excited about the stuff we do again, excited to watch anime, which is probably the best thing to come out of cons for me every time. Just excited about projects and about making stuff, and really, especially watching his panels, we got really excited about just art and like why, like the real reason we do this podcast and like why it kind of inspires us and stuff.
Yeah. The KomoriCon held two panels with Amano. And they were both an hour and a half long, so they really had a chance to like get some deep questions in and like really dig in and get a good discussion going.
Yeah, the reason that they were able to have him and that they were putting on these panels is because there is a biography about him that I guess has already been released in France.
They said he was too humble to have a biography written about him in Japanese. Like he didn't want that to be written and published in Japan, because then people that he knew would read it.
Yeah. I can kind of get that. Like, I think I would be I have like thought before, if I was to write a book about myself, I would have to hold back so much if I wrote it under my name and I knew people I knew could read it. So like I kind of get that. But I'm sure the reason it was released in French is because he loves Paris.
Yeah. Apparently he spends a significant portion of the year, like a couple of months out of every year, just in Paris hanging out.
Yeah. Yeah, so the his biography has already been published in French, and I guess Dark Horse Manga and their whole licensing team is working with or a part of translating it into English and releasing it here in North America. This was kind of one of a couple of like conventions and events that they were bringing him to, kind of promoting his biography, but like it was not just like schlocking a biography. They were really using this as an opportunity to like really bring him and what he does to where people can see it and kind of take part in it.
Which is kind of, from everything that he talked about, kind of what he's into. Like, they got into a lot of talking about, like, art collections and, like, the audience of art and the fact that he is really into people having access to it. And Dark Horse Manga is not just publishing his biography that's coming out. They have been publishing his works for quite a while now. They approached him, said that they were excited about his work and that they, you know, really wanted to bring it to a wider audience. And like, would he please let them publish, translate and publish it? And they said he had previously been approached by DC and Marvel about basically making him into a commodity and like getting his licenses to put his work on things. And he wasn't into that, but he said the people who contacted him from Dark Horse Manga seemed really sincere about being interested in his work and being interested in like the culture.
Yeah, they said that they've worked with him for like, what, like 15 years or
something?
Yeah,
they've been working with him for a long time.
Quite a while. So like the kind of the nature of like Dark Horse Manga's relationship with Amano is like, was kind of the thread throughout the whole like panel and presentations, because like, it was just so personal. And I think the reason for that was because, as we learned, Amano holds all his own copyright. Like, he is basically his own, like, business.
Yeah. Even the things that he's done for Final Fantasy and things like that, he owns the copyright to all of his work.
Yeah. So he has, like, creative license for everything, and I guess for like distribution, which gives him like the say on where stuff goes mm-hmm. and how it gets made and what he has to do or doesn't want to do
yeah.
with his art or with his time, which is like insanely the rare dream. For anyone. But like, as they covered about his life and his biography, like there are reasons why he can do that, and it's because mm-hmm. of how he got his start and how like how he's been working for so long and just like had the means to be able to be have control of his own like art and his work style. But because yeah, like you're saying, hey, they didn't want him to like create anything new or like have to adapt stuff. Mm-hmm. They just wanted to like take his work that already existed and like publish it as is, like art books, just like compilations and presenting it, mm-hmm. Which is really, really cool. And like, it kind of speaks to how their philosophy of like the stuff that they publish is and like how they see the works that they put out. And that just like, that was kind of echoed in like their entire relationship with him. And like the team that is working with him is the personal team that's been working with him for all 15 years. And they had like a working relationship, but also were just like obviously friends and were so comfortable with one another. It was really fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
The guy who was working most closely with him and was his translator, his name is Michael Gombos. He speaks fluent Japanese. He lived in Japan.
Yeah, he said he has spent a lot of time like just hanging out and traveling with Amano to their different appearances and things.
Yeah, and it was pretty exciting because this, like, his time in Portland at this convention was his first time visiting the Northwest, visiting Portland, and like getting to visit their Dark Horse studio, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, we got to hear Amano's personal thoughts on Portland, and he said he's enjoying it. He said it has more of an individual character than some of the like bigger cities like Paris and Tokyo that he's been in, because it's not quite as big and not quite as like
metropolitan.
Yeah, it's not quite as metropolitan. Also, he said they took Amano to Powell's books, and he spent what they said like 2 hours in the rare book Pearl Room.
Yeah, if you know anything about Powell's, it's just a huge like bookstore that takes up a whole block.
Yeah, it's an entire city block, like massive warehouse full of books.
You can spend days in there, like mm-hmm. just hanging out, shopping, reading books. And he just like parked in one section of the bookstore yep. for 2 hours and just bought like a bunch of art books. Mm-hmm. They said they had to like ship stuff freight back to his house.
Yes.
And then they said that after he parked there for like 2 hours, they told him that there was a like comics and manga room. And he was like, what?
Yeah.
You didn't tell me. He's like, we have to go back.
Yeah, he's like, I want to go back later. I like missed the comic book room. Look, if you ever make it to the Northwest, definitely go to Powell's. The last time we were there, we went to a bar and had a couple drinks and then went to Powell's a little bit tipsy, and I accidentally spent $80. Yeah, so like I said, they had two panels. The first one was just billed as a live drawing panel, and they started out kind of talking about like his work, and they talked a lot about Vampire Hunter D, since that's kind of like one of his first big freelance projects when he started working on his own. And he has like, he did the first illustration for the first Vampire Hunter D novel and has been doing them from 1983 until present.
Apparently he really loves it.
Yeah. At some point he said that he never gets tired of drawing D and will just draw things in his free time and then like bring them to the author like, hey, can you work this into the story? I already drew it.
That was so funny to hear that he just like enjoys just like on his own drawing mm-hmm. that kind of stuff.
Normally when I see live drawing on a like panel description, I'm like, yeah, okay, they will have like, you know, a 8.5 by 11.
Yeah, kind of like an overhead projector.
Yeah, situation. Like an overhead projector, 8.5 by 11 piece of paper that they will do like a
I mean, that's what happened in the Go Nagai panel.
Yeah, in the Go Nagai panel when he was like, oh, I've got my like drawing pens and I'll just whip out a devil man.
In like 10 minutes,
yeah. We walked in and there was a just huge canvas on an easel and a whole bunch of paint supplies. And we were like, oh, this is not a live drawing. This is a live painting.
Yeah.
They
talked for an hour and I was like, is he going to have time to paint? And they were like, oh, yeah.
Yes. They were like, well, we've got about 40 minutes left. Let's have him do the live painting. And we were like, okay. We should have had seatbelts. It was just out of this world. I think he started out with like a charcoal pencil or something because he like sketched.
He just took like a really light watered down black. And
was it? Because I heard like I heard like a sketchy noise.
Oh, maybe he did. But it was.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he started out with like a sketching pencil, like maybe 15 seconds of sketching with pencil and then just like blorp into the black paint, like started putting on like rough silhouette, did the face, went through, you're like, oh, well, there's a hat. Okay, he's done the hat. Okay. Like big gesture swoop for the cloak. And then like started just get the big brush out and going crazy on the background.
It was so fun. He just went for it. He spent so much time on the like shadows.
Yeah.
Because like,
I mean. Yeah. And he is like, just like, I'm like a little bit speechless going, remembering back on it and trying to figure out how to describe it.
Well, for one thing, he's super athletic.
Yeah.
He's like really spry for mm-hmm. his age.
Yeah. He is just like standing the whole time, like squatting down to get the bottom of the canvas and like big dynamic movements and throwing paint onto the thing and squishing the brush against the top so that it drips down because it's all creepy in Vampire Hunter D.
You could hear the paintbrush slaps and it was so funny. They didn't put a mat down for his first painting. Yeah. And that was a mistake because he just went for it with the paint and he did not care where it went. No. He was not bothered by the fact that he was getting it all over their rented stage.
Yeah. At the after the second live drawing, we hung around for a while and just chatted with Carl Horn, who is an editor at Dark Horse Manga that we've met before. Last KomoriCon, but we were sitting around talking to him, and there was KomoriCon staff there with paper towels and like and like a wet towel, like blotting the paint off the stage and trying to clean to get up it his, off.
Like aftermath. Yeah. It was so fun. We were like standing in front of his second painting, talking, just because that was like the front of the stage. And then after a half hour, we realized we had been sitting watching paint dry. Our friend Diana was like, "This is the best time I've ever had watching paint dry."
Yeah, like I'm enjoying it. But yeah, so we were just blown away by the first live drawing. It took him right about 35 or 40 minutes to create that beautiful Vampire Hunter D illustration, which in the middle of drawing this, Danny leaned over to me and said, sad anime boy facing left.
Yeah. It's like he sketched this out and it was just like D kind of looking over his shoulder, but facing left and like looking melancholy. I was like, this is like the pose that every like fan artist gives themselves shit for drawing over and over and over again. But like, you know what? Amano did it. When we went to Go Nagai's panel, he did it.
Yeah.
It's just like,
yeah, the Go Nagai live drawing was Cutie Honey facing left and then Devil Man facing left. And now we got Vampire Hunter, D facing left.
Yeah. No shame, I guess. No. I was like, I feel validated.
I know. Yeah, it was just absolutely fascinating to watch his process and what he does first and like kind of like see where his mind goes when he's like, okay, put details on this, what next?
Honestly, like that struck me so hard because it was like like if I had to describe it, it was like affirming to watch him, to watch the order in which he approached things. Because like if you ever like read a book on like how to draw manga, you know,
and it's or got, even like, just like how to draw in general. Yeah.
Especially people like, who are not experienced drawers.
Yeah. And like if you are studying drawing, like yes, it's a good idea to sketch out your proportions and everything, but
for studies,
when you're just drawing for fun or when you're just like, there is no shame and actually a lot to be gained in doing gestures.
Yeah. Or just like it was clear that he put down the emotions that he wanted first and then based everything around that. Mm-hmm. Like he started with a like circle for the head, kind of about where the hat would go. Mm-hmm. Then a just like S curve for the direction that his body was going to go. And then he drew the face.
Yep.
And like, I always feel guilty for drawing the face almost first whenever I make drawings. But like, we were talking like right afterwards about how like, that's where the emotion is.
Yeah.
And like, if you're trying to say a feeling with your drawing, like, if you don't get that right, then the rest doesn't matter. So, like, in some cases, it's probably okay to start with, like, the most important part. Or, like, the reason you wanted to draw it.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah.
It was really interesting. He was so playful in how he did it. Like, he's done live drawing sessions before.
Yeah.
Probably for a really long mm-hmm. time. So, you could tell he was, like he wanted to entertain in a sense, but also like it wasn't for show, like he was genuinely enjoying it, and you could tell he probably paints like that at home sometimes.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, he like got kind of most of the like silhouette and details down, and then he just put a little bat in the corner, and then he's going around and like filling in the background, and then he just decides to put a little face on the bat, just a little like doink doink whoop smiley face on the bat. the commentator asked if the bat had a name, and he said, no, I don't think so.
Like, the reason I think that he went with D in the first panel, like, he didn't necessarily plan out what he was going to paint, and he didn't tell us what he was going to paint beforehand. Not at all. But within the panel, there was a cosplayer of D, and they incredible. Were spectacular. Like, they had a ton of detail, and like, the craftsmanship was beautiful, but on the back of the cape, they had, like, it looked like chalk paint or like pastels just drawn onto the back of the cape of D.
Yeah.
And like, also on the gauntlets, they just like had put beautiful extra art onto their cosplay. Mm-hmm. And they like stood up for the crowd, and Amano was like, oh, Sugoi. Yeah. And like, he clearly was like admiring her, like, mm-hmm. her work. And it appeared that was what kind of sent him mm-hmm. into it. He was like, now I get to draw it.
Yeah.
It was so cool to see that interaction.
They were talking, I think, about whether he kind of has specifics in mind, or whether he kind of like lets a general feeling determine what he's going to draw. Like, if he sits down with an idea of an exact pose and an exact everything that he's going to do. And he was saying that there are a few, like, he doesn't have a lot of restrictions for what he draws for D, but there are a few rules. And one of them is that D never takes off his hat. And the cosplayer who was sitting right behind us just sort of puts her hat back on.
They were joking.
Yeah,
they were joking around. They were like, Carl Horn was like, maybe he's bald under that hat.
Yeah.
We don't know. And Amano was like, he never takes it off even when he sleeps.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just a cute, and like, he was so like genuine and like easygoing the whole panel, that you, like, for both panels, we just got him talking for over 2 hours, just like very freely and comfortably, mm-hmm. and like saying stuff that you, because of also the interviewers, of just like stuff that you would not read in articles.
Yeah.
Not like deep dark secrets, but just like his genuine opinion on things, mm-hmm. that like sometimes it's very hard to get that out of special guests, because mm-hmm. they can be really reserved, or they can have a lot of restrictions on like the
what
company,
they're allowed to talk
about. Yeah, like the company that's bringing them, and they have to keep really general like opinions. But like, because he is his own like boss and like owns all of his stuff, he can say whatever he wants, and
yeah.
like, he just is accountable to himself. And because he was so comfortable with the team and so excited to be there, and he even commented on how like he had just come from a couple months ago, I guess, San Diego Comic Con, mm-hmm. and how huge and overwhelming it was, and it was like not much of a chance to interact with the audience there, and then coming to KomoriCon, which is like a couple thousand people, and how like intimate it was, and how interesting that dynamic was. It was just, yeah. It was so fun. It was so personal. Like,
yeah, that is really what it felt like. And like, it did help that we were in the front.
Yeah.
It helped a lot.
But like, not just the way he was talking and the stories he was telling, but like that just kind of vibe and like energy really carried on to his painting too. Like, it felt personal and like unrestricted, mm-hmm. and exciting. And you could just feel the emotions that he wanted while he was painting.
Mm-hmm. Also, he, the Vampire Hunter D painting he donated to the KomoriCon charity auction, which I thought was extremely, extremely nice and generous.
Yeah.
And I wonder if we'll be able to find out like how much it went for.
Yeah.
I'm extremely curious about who got it. I was like, damn, I want it. Like,
yeah. But I mean, like, think about, I hope that the person who wound up with it also got to watch it be painted, because like, that is just so much more special.
Yeah.
And it's just like exactly the heart of like his whole like feelings on, mm-hmm. art and stuff is like,
yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
The important part of art is like the emotion that was going into it at the time, mm-hmm. and like kind of your experience, your emotional experience with the art. But like, if you watched it happen and it was such a special thing at the time, like, that's so much more special if that you own that piece of like your experience there.
That would be so cool. The most shocking thing that we found out during the second panel is that he owns almost all of his originals, which is just unheard of.
Yeah, it's insane. Like,
to be an artist and not sell your art is really incredible, because it's just not how the industry works.
Yeah.
But he gets away with it because he has been working for so long, because he started out doing like working another job, basically, like working as an illustrator and also doing original paintings.
And like a character designer.
Because he has gotten so much work doing character designs and doing illustrations and things, mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah, that came up because Carl asked if there was like a specific fan or one person that was like a collector of his stuff, like who, he was asking who owns the most of his pieces, and he was like, actually I don't sell them if I can. He keeps them not just like because he doesn't want people to own them necessarily, but because he said that he goes back through and like physically revisits his old pieces to kind of like remember where he was at that time and what he was trying to say, and kind of let that inspire him and remind him.
Yeah, he says, he said that his like his works are kind of like pages in his diary. And, like, it doesn't really make sense to tear out a page of your diary.
Yeah.
And, like, sell it to someone. And also that he, like, he kind of has a philosophy against owning original artworks.
Like, he doesn't collect anyone else's
art either. Yeah, he doesn't collect originals of anyone else's artwork either. He collects art books, as we saw from the Powell's story. But he doesn't believe in, like, individuals kind of hoarding their art collections.
Yeah.
He is into museums. And he said he's interested in, like, having a place to display all of his work, like a, like, public place that people could come, like a museum that people could go to.
Like, basically he wants to make his own museum of his own works.
Yeah.
So that, like, but, like, how cool is that, that he, if he pulls that off, like, he will be the, he will be in complete control of making sure that his work gets to be places where he, people can see it, where he wants it, and that, like, nobody can just chop it around or use it just like super commercially and like turn it into something that it's not. Gosh, like I honestly cannot think of another creator who can pull that off and who believes in that kind of art philosophy so strongly.
I don't either. For most people, like, even if you are like, even if you are like edgy anti-establishment, like, you know, art for art's sake art creator, you still gotta eat, and that usually means selling your artwork to rich people.
Yeah. I mean, because, like, if you are starting out as an artist and you're, like, trying to make your money off of it, like, you're creating physical art as a product that you're selling. Like, that's the physical thing that you sell. And, like, since he started out in animation as a high schooler, so crazy.
Yeah, that was quite a story.
I mean, that's all, that's, like, pretty common knowledge, and that's covered a lot in his biography, but, like, he started off kind of just animating, and then he got into kind of freelance, and like basically he became one of the industry's first character designers for anime as we know character design today. And like he was talking about how as a character designer, what people see in their homes and like in books and stuff is like someone else's rendition of his ideas.
Yeah, and especially as a character designer for video games, because you are limited by what, like, the technology of graphics that are available.
Yeah, so, like, what he's creating is, like, the idea and the concept and, like, the look of things, and then other people are drawing it, and that kind of, like, he was talking about how that kind of, like, bumps him out just a little bit, that, like, that people don't get to see physically what he made.
Yeah, that there's that separation between him and, like, the viewer of his work.
Yeah, I don't know the Japanese term, but they said it, like, it doesn't, like, he, it doesn't touch the eyes of the people who see it. That was, like, the direct translation, or it was just, like, it doesn't meet someone else's eye physically. But, like, in a way, that's what, like, provides him the ability to control his originals, like, the way he does. Because he's basically, like, as a character designer, he's basically a consultant. Like, an ideas consultant for what other people should do. And, like, the artwork that other people should make, which is awesome. Because he still gets to, like, retain his creative license and ideas. And then keep all his originals. But yeah, so like if that is the way he makes money, then he can kind of like maintain this artistic ideal of existence. The way he creates art. It's it, like I just keep freaking out about the way he gets to do this, because like everybody talks as if this is the way like we wish all artists could operate, but like he actually does it.
Yeah.
And like he doesn't just do it to be like counterculture and edgy. Like you can tell he does it because like that's why he does art is because he wants to, like, he's just one of those artists that just makes art because he's gotta.
Yeah.
And because that's how he talks. He manages it that way so that he can make sure he is doing the most direct form, the most pure form of, like, speaking to people the way he speaks to himself through his art. So freaking cool.
They were really good panels, you guys.
Speaking of, we have a few videos
Yes.
We will put them on the podcast Twitter, but we took some video. They allowed us to take any videos and photo during the panels, which is, again, super rare and really cool.
Extremely rare, especially with Japanese guests.
Mm-hmm. And, like, you could tell he, like, wanted you to be able to share the way he does things and, like, how he thinks with other people, and that it wasn't just, like, KomoriCon exclusive.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just so cool. But
I took some videos of the live drawings and the live paint, or the... Yeah, I took some videos of the live painting and of the panel when he's talking about Angel's Egg, and I will post those on the podcast Twitter.
Yeah. If you want to see like videos of his painting process or his thoughts on during the interviews about his work on Angel's Egg, we'll post those on at Anime is Lit Pod on Twitter. I'll put the link in the show notes to that too.
So Angel's Egg. We have a podcast. A whole podcast all about Angel's Egg.
We did a joint episode with Wari Desho back in the spring, all about Angel's Egg, courtesy of the Subtle Doctor who planned that one out.
Mm-hmm. Very, very good episode. Good movie. We get into a lot of stuff in that one. Amano talked briefly about making Angel's Egg with Mamoroshi and the fact that they were originally brought together to do Lupin.
Lupin the Third.
Lupin the Third. They were going
with Ghibli.
Yeah, like they were going to do, but they were going to do a series.
Yeah. I'm not up on my Lupin history, but I know that at least Miyazaki worked on both the series and the film that he made, Kazuyoshi.
So yeah, they were originally brought together to do that, and then it just didn't really shake out, and then they just decided to go and do whatever they wanted to do, which was Angel's Egg.
Yeah.
They said it was a really, like, they knew that they were definitely doing something that, like, it was just something that they wanted to make. It wasn't something that someone had asked them to make.
Like really experimental, not just in the, like, obviously the content and the storytelling as like an art film, but also like in the form that they were making it and just kind of breaking out of the definition of like what anime was at the time in the industry and anyway.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, they decided like, we're going to make this thing because we want to make it. Then Angel's Egg happened and it was not a great success in Japan at the time that it came out. And Amano said he felt kind of bad about, like, he felt like he kind of got Oshii involved in something that might have been damaging to his career because he kind of stopped getting calls to do work after that for a while.
It's while we were remembering back on what he said at the panel, I was kind of struck by the fact that we were talking about how he's so, like, independent and kind of does what he wants to do. He obviously, like, is smart about the kinds of work he takes, but, like, his philosophy of, like, creating for him has really, really panned out for him.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, like, kind of Oshii's life story, it kind of seems like is a little bit the opposite.
Yeah, a little bit.
He does get to do what he wants sometimes, but then that's the stuff that doesn't get as well received.
Yeah.
That's really, really tragic.
And they, like, recognize that it is, people recognize it now as, like, an absolutely beautiful and artistic film. Like, it gets more recognition now. But was it Carl Horn who asked?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Carl Horn asked directly, like, do you have any idea why Angel's Egg has never been released in English or, like, in North America? He said it is just caught up in licensing limbo.
Yeah. He basically gave the impression that it's a hard license to sell.
Yeah.
But also that it's, yeah, because it's old and, like, I think he said it's a clearanced license.
Yeah. But it's like, subtitling it would take, like, 10 minutes.
I know.
There's, like, 15 lines of dialogue. Just please. I just want a Blu-ray.
Yeah.
Please.
Just that actually decent picture quality would be fantastic.
Yeah. Yep.
Also, maybe someday, like, just the way... I know there are people who could make it happen that want it to happen.
Yep. I would crowdfund. We should... How does crowdfunding work? Oh, do I just say I want something and then people
back
give me
Kickstarter.
Money?
Yeah. You could tell, like, you wanted it to be available here also.
But yeah. I just want there to be an actual legal way that we can point people to go watch it.
Yeah, really. It'd be great to own it too. I was like, man, if I could get him to sign one thing, I would love to have a copy of Angel's Egg random signed, but you can't buy it in English.
No kidding. Also, another story from the panel. He said that the moment he really felt like he was in Portland was during the signing, when someone came up to him and asked them to sign their arm and said that they were going to go get it tattooed immediately. And they already had, I think he said it was a Vampire Hunter D tattoo on one arm.
Yeah, they had some other anime tattoo on their arm.
Yeah. And that person was in the panel and they did go and get it tattooed and that it kind of hurt.
Yeah, he was like, oh, can I see?
Yeah.
It was so funny. He said that was a first for him, mm-hmm. having someone get a tattoo of his signature. It's pretty funny. That is really Portland, honestly. Yeah,
extremely.
Yeah. That was fun, him talking about his impressions of Portland, but also Carl Horn, I think it was Carl Horn, was mentioning, like, or at least their team was mentioning how when he goes and travels and, like, kind of spends time in the city, he likes to just stop and sketch things that he sees, because things like the look of everything and the infrastructure and the architecture is so different. Like, mm-hmm. he'll just sketch a trash can because it looks totally different from the way trash cans are designed at yeah. home, and that kind of, the like mundane things that really give you the feel of a setting when you kind of draw in, when you draw a location.
Mm-hmm.
And they were even talking about how, like, you can really tell when an artist has not actually visited or even seen a place that yeah. they're trying to draw, because if you're from there, you're like, that's not how it looks here. Mm-hmm. And he likes to really get a sense for that.
Yeah.
But they were talking about really, like, distinctly American things that he's drawn while being in America, because he spent a lot of time in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And they mentioned one of the things, he just has a painting of, like, a pickup truck.
Yeah.
And how specifically American that is.
Yeah, because, like, in other countries, they do not just drive pickup trucks around and have them as, like, their cars.
Yeah, he was like, it's so funny. Here you drive them and there's nothing in the bed. You just yeah. drive them.
I was like, yeah, you're right. That's stupid.
They were like, what's more American than a pickup mm-hmm. truck? Nothing. And then they mentioned that while they were driving in Portland, somebody pulled up next to them in a giant pickup truck, like, blaring music. Like,
with the big wheels.
With big wheels and rims. And Michael, the translator, was just like, oh, no.
Like, oh, this is kind of embarrassing. But Amano was just really into it. Like, wow.
He was really excited because that felt, like, so American to mm-hmm. him, which is pretty funny if you think about it.
They talked a little bit about Amano's influences and, like, how his style has changed. And they showed a series of his work. And he has just done vastly different work. But they had him talk about some of his, like, earlier influences, and he said part of what first got him into art was pop art, like the pop art movement in the U.S., and that he first encountered it through, like, magazines and other things that were left behind by American soldiers after the Vietnam War. There was just, like, this was the first exposure that had come over, and that later on he, like, you know, Amano started doing artwork and started kind of working in that style, and that he moved to New York to kind of, like, do his work over there and kind of work in the environment that gave rise to pop art, because he thought it was really important to, like, making it authentic, I guess.
Yeah. Carl Horn is just, like, so crazy knowledgeable about stuff. Yes. You could tell he had done so much research and wanted to specifically ask questions that he had not heard or seen the answers to mm-hmm. anywhere, because he just nailed it with every question.
Yeah.
And he got so deep, but, like, the way he framed that question was, he pulled up a piece of Amano's that looked very, like,
it was very, like, flat colors, bright colors, like a simple line.
Mm-hmm. It was like a painting of a really poppy looking mm-hmm. kind of cartoonish looking girl, way brighter than his normal style.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's, like, he's very varied in his abilities, but yes. you can tell he just really likes his, like, classic look of mm-hmm. the pale faces and the hair. And
yeah, the
and
like, the stringy hair. And
yeah, that's probably just, like, his favorite art style, but mm-hmm. he's very, very versatile. And Carl was asking him, like, what kind of goes into you making pieces like this? Because I think that pop one was a more recent piece of his.
Yeah, it was a more recent piece. And he said, basically, recently he has been going back through his... like, his roots and, like, the things that inspired him to get into art in the very beginning, and, like, revisiting those and seeing how his perspective has changed on them, and, like, doing pieces related to that, which is just so cool.
Yeah. The second way Carl framed that question was he was asking, what do you think about, like the pop art movement and artists who, say, like, artists who drew in the comic book style but weren't actually comic book artists, or, like, familiar with actually how creating, like, the thing that they are depicting works,
mm-hmm.
because, like, obviously what they were depicting was, like, their impression of it,
mm-hmm.
like, as, like, just kind of that artist's personal encounters with the objects that they're painting,
mm-hmm.
it, as opposed to being a person who, like, originally creates that kind of stuff,
mm-hmm.
and it seemed like that question could lead into kind of a, like, like a frowning answer and like kind of looking down on that kind of art, but he really didn't. Like he was like, he was saying, he almost gave the impression that there was like a little bit of pressure to kind of look down on things like pop art, because he was saying when he started making that, and then he kind of had to distance himself from that a little bit and kind of get into a little bit more classical stuff kind of in the middle of his career. He mentioned that really briefly. And then he came back and revisited the pop stuff because he was like, this is like genuinely where I got like my inspiration and a lot of my emotions and my interest in what I do. So like, I can't discount it. And mm-hmm. like, he wanted to celebrate it and like kind of bring it to more people and just like revisit why he loved it, mm-hmm. which was so cool. Yeah, they kept commenting on how he's like humble and like that's a common thing to hear about Japanese guests and stuff. But like, he really was in the sense that like, he just does not see himself as like, I don't know, separate from like other types of art or yeah. He's just like, he just creates for him and what he loves, and he happens to be great at it.
Yeah. One of the other inspirations that he had in the very beginning was comic book art. Like American comic book art.
Yeah, he talked about buying physical comics that had been left behind by mm-hmm. American soldiers. He also mentioned like going to a comic book store that is still there. Oh gosh, I wish I could remember the name of that place.
I don't remember
either. It was crazy. I'm sure that's in the biography. Mm-hmm. But he mentioned saving up his like allowance as a kid to buy one of those comic books, but did not realize that like with American comics that sometimes the cover artist is different than the artist of the book, which is really, it is true and yeah. really a crappy way that mm-hmm. the comic book industry here runs, because I forgot that frustrated me when I first got into comics too. Like I've done the same thing as like a kid getting into comics and being like, wait, yeah, this like, isn't what's inside.
Yeah. And, like, because the outside of the books were drawn by his like favorite comic artist and the yeah. inside was not at all.
It was so funny to hear him also be frustrated by that thing that is like another bar to entry. Anyway,
actually they were saying that the resale comic shop that used to be there is now the site of like one of the biggest comic publishers in Japan.
So cool.
Yeah, it's incredible.
Just like hearing all of the instances where he was there for the beginning of stuff, mm-hmm. of like industries that are just like so commonplace now that you don't really think about how they got their start and like yeah. how people felt about them when they were starting or why they started. Mm-hmm. It was so neat. I'm really stoked to read his biography. Like yeah, at first I was like, maybe I'll check it out. But now I'm like, I'm going to buy it. I'm going to read it right away.
So anyway, that biography, since we are now also advertising it, that biography is coming out in November. I think they said like around mm-hmm. mid-November.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I think he mentioned some comic artist that he got to meet in San Diego Comic-Con. But then he said that Frank Miller is like coming to where he lives in Japan.
Yes.
And we're just going to meet in like a month and hang out. I was like, God, it's so cool. Must be the coolest thing about being a prolific creator is getting to meet the people that are also as influential that you yeah. want to meet. Mm-hmm. Like clearly he enjoys that too. So cool. I guess what I took away from that panel was seeing his enthusiasm for the things, for other people's art that he loves. Mm-hmm. And for his own art and how he lets that determine what he makes and why and how he treats it. Mm-hmm. That's like, those are all the reasons that people get into art in the first place. And that's why, like, that's why we love art and that's why we love creating and that's why it matters. And it made me just like want to create more and like
yeah, it was
do more art.
Like a really big inspiration. And like just like seeing his like genuine enthusiasm and like the extreme joy he still takes in the process of his work was really, really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Also, the second panel, the second live painting that he did, once again, he didn't tell us what it was going to be, but the translator said that he asked Amano earlier if he had any ideas, and Amano said, I think I have an idea, and then winked at him. And so he starts out with this sort of imposing silhouette, just facing forward, another dark background. And, you know, everybody's kind of sitting there like, is that what I think it is?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. And then he takes the white paint and just goes shoop across the canvas and makes a lightsaber, and it becomes extremely apparent to everyone in the audience at the same time that he is drawing Darth Vader.
He's just straight up painting Darth Vader.
Just painting Darth Vader.
And everyone just like kind of gasped and laughed at the same time. Like, yeah. Oh, man.
And you could... He got a giggle out of that, I think.
Yeah, that was a fun crowd moment.
Yeah. So yeah, he just did a really incredible acrylic painting of Darth Vader. Or, as he said, a completely original Final Fantasy character with no copyright infringement intended.
Like, even just that is such a, it's like a funny gesture, but also just, like, it is, like, a testament to his humility, not in that it's, like, fake, but it's just, like, he just makes what he thinks is awesome. Mm-hmm.
And he painted Darth Vader because earlier they had been joking around about some, like, Japanese number pun having to do with Darth Vader's name.
Yeah, they said, like, das and dozen are similar. And so, it's, like, a 12 pun. Mm-hmm. So it's, like, so it's 12 Vader.
Yeah.
He just did that. He just slapped some Star Wars fan art onto a canvas.
Mm-hmm. In front of a live audience.
Yeah, and like no shame in making what you love, mm-hmm. and what inspires you, and enjoying stuff that like just with the attitude towards Star Wars these days of how it's so pop culture that it's stupid now. And like, why? If you loved it originally and like you still love it, what's wrong with that?
Yeah, like chill.
If it makes you love what you do and want to make more stuff, then do it. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we about ready to wrap up?
Probably.
All right. Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. We almost forgot to mention the absolute craziest story from KomoriCon. We walked out of the panel. We hung around with Carl Horn for like half an hour, just shooting the breeze, talking about anime.
They like kicked us out because they were setting up. Like J. Michael Tatum and Monica Rial just kind of like wandered in and we were like, oh, we have to leave.
Yeah. They were just setting up for their next panel. We were like, oh, all right. Well, so we left. We walked outside. We go to the elevator to go down to the main con floor because we're going to go to Artist Alley. And there is Yoshitaka Amano.
They're like all in there in that
they
elevator.
They are getting into the elevator that we are also getting into. So we got to share an elevator with him. And
we were just like, ah.
Yeah. Yep. Just have a panic attack in the elevator a little bit.
We like thanked them for coming.
Yep. And thank them for putting on a really, really great panel.
Yeah. And he was like really sweet and mm-hmm. thanking us back. And we were like, no. Thank you. And then we were like, ah. I'm just going to wander off. Yep. And he was really sweet and said goodbye to us. That was crazy.
Absolutely nuts.
We were just like vibrating after we got off the elevator. Just like, ah.
They got off at a different floor. We went all the way down and they got off at the second floor. And so we just got to the bottom like.
we were getting out of the elevator and our friend Zoran was like, wait, I have to hit the emergency button because I'm having an emergency. It was so funny. Yeah. We were just like glowing after that just because like that was like the just, like, final button on our
what,
amazing
like,
con.
What on earth just happened?
Oh man, one more thing I wanted to mention. Mm. When we were chatting with Carl Horn after, and he was talking about our friend Diana mentioned, I think it's great that he appreciates cosplayers of his stuff because some people are not as into it and are like kind of like not as excited about other people cosplaying their work and being like probably too enthusiastic about it. But it was clear that he'd had some good experiences with it and he really appreciated the cosplayer that was there because like it was obvious how much they were inspired by him. But Carl Horn mentioned somebody in the States has followed Amano from like event to event and the cons that he's been to as a D cosplayer.
Basically, this cosplayer has like had Amano design one new piece of their cosplay every event that he meets him at.
He was like, can you draw like what the shoulder pauldrons would look like or what the hat jewel would look like?
Yep. So he said that this cosplayer's hat ornament, shoulder pauldrons, chest decoration were all designed like sketched by Amano during like a meet and greets.
Yeah, like Amano would sketch it and physically hand it to him. He would take it and then go home and make it and bring it to the next one. Mm-hmm. And that Amano loved it.
And I think it was a picture from the biography of this cosplayer holding out a sword that they had made and having Amano sketch a filigree design for it that they would go and like put on the sword after that.
Yeah, then he went home and engraved it after that. Like how freaking cool is that?
That is amazing.
And that was just again another version of like him inspiring people, being inspired back, and just like loving what, like, other people do, and loving his, like, loving that what he wanted to say made it to that person.
Yeah, and, like, loving the process of creation and, like, contributing to other people's processes of creation.
Yeah. If that's not why you're making art, then why are you making art?
Yeah.
That was so much fun. I'm, like, never going to forget, first of all, just watching him paint.
Yep.
And second of all, just, like,
and, like,
his attitude about why he does what he does.
Just an audience of, like, probably 300 people, dead silent for 40 minutes, watching him paint.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It was, like, there wasn't even a Q&A session in either of those hour and a half long panels.
No.
But, like, it didn't matter because they were so good at asking him questions. And yep. Also, like, the audience was, like, emotionally participating with them,
mm-hmm.
especially for the painting.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, yeah, huge shout out to, like, the staff at Dark Horse Manga for really putting on, like, a really special presentation and panel and, like, clearly being extremely passionate about what they do and the stuff that they put out. What a special thing that they do and that they brought that you just don't see very often at cons. Or
we are honestly super lucky to live in the same state that Dark Horse Manga operates out of, because we've seen them, I think, in 3 different panels.
Mm-hmm.
And you just always get the sense that everyone who works, like everyone that we have seen doing panels, is extremely passionate about the material and is like a genuine fan. And like, it's not just a job for them at all.
Yeah. And they clearly like get why the fans are there and mm-hmm. like what they care about and want to see. And like, they used every minute of that panel to bring us stuff that mattered instead of just like, like, okay, I'll go ahead and say it. When we went to AX and saw that Go Nagai panel, it's like we saw an equally incredible guest, but we got barely
nothing.
Any glimpse into
it. Because their questions for him were like, where do you find the energy to keep drawing so much? And he's like, what? I don't know. Like, yeah. What kind of question is that?
They barely let him talk, which is like, it's the case sometimes with stuff. And then they just showed us like 2 episodes of the anime.
Yeah, recently. The anime that was already completely done and out.
Yeah. You're like, stuff that you could just do on your couch at home.
When Go Nagai is not right there in
He's
front of
right
you.
There. Yeah. And then he like really quick drew some stuff and it was like, I feel like I could have just Googled this after and
yep.
gotten the same experience mm-hmm. to an extent. Whereas this was the complete opposite of that.
Yeah.
It's just like, goes to show that like,
AX ain't shit.
It is sometimes, but like,
sometimes it is shit. Sometimes it is the shit.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just shit.
Sometimes you can have really special stuff and it depends on a lot of unknown factors, but primarily like people who love what they do.
Yeah. Some of our most incredible experiences have been at our little local cons, like mm-hmm. this panel. And then when we saw the like entire crew for Thunderbolt Fantasy at SakuraCon.
Yeah.
And also seeing Romy Park at Anime Revolution.
That was, I don't know like, how we lucked out doing that.
I know. That was like another like massive con highlight.
Yeah. Anyway. Now that I think about it, all 3 of those panels that were so special were so interactive with the audience
mm-hmm.
because in Thunderbolt they brought us the physical puppets and they brought them around and we got to touch them and
yeah.
they walked through the audience and like did demonstrations
mm-hmm.
and then with the Romy Park stuff they did a live dubbing
was so cool,
a live like Seiyu session basically with her and another Seiyu and we just got to like watch them do stuff
mm-hmm.
And then in her Q&A panel she was just so bubbly and funny and
yeah.
just loved interacting with the audience, and that was just so special and memorable. And like again, like you go to cons because you get to see the people you would never get to see anywhere else and like in a setting that you don't, that just doesn't happen everywhere else
mm-hmm.
and this was just one of those really special times.
Yeah.
So if you ever get to see Yoshitaka Amano, go
do it.
Go.
Mm-hmm.
It is 100% worth it. Go check out some of his art. Check out his art books.
Mm-hmm.
His works are gorgeous, especially that like almost mural that they showed us. That
yeah.
huge
it
canvas.
It was a, gosh, what did they say? It was like 19 feet by 45 feet or something like, ridiculous
yeah,
like that.
Also, if you ever get to interact with or even just see the like Dark Horse Manga crew at a con, like try going up and talking to them. If you see Carl Horn at a con, he will talk to you about anything forever.
Yeah.
Especially about the stuff he loves.
That has happened to us both times that we've met him. He just like loves talking about this stuff and is basically an encyclopedia of information about different things. And like, he's just a really nice person.
He has one of the raddest perspectives too, because he was a like hardcore fan back in the day, like
yeah.
back in the 80s
mm-hmm.
was like the kind of nerd that you find who knows everything about the industry and stuff was that back then when, like,
yeah,
who knew about that stuff in the 80s before about how the internet, anime yeah. industry worked.
Yeah. and like saw Angel's Egg at a like special film festival screening back, you know, shortly after it came out in the US.
In California. He said he yeah. saw it on Laserdisc in the 80s.
Yep.
At a convention.
At a like, yeah, at a film festival, I think yeah. it was. And he like was aware of Evangelion as it was being produced.
Yeah. He just got to experience so many things that we think of as like the like landmarks of anime mm-hmm. in the past as they were happening.
Yeah.
And he loves talking about.
And he has tons and tons and tons of stories about them.
Yep. And he will just go if you get him started. Yeah. So definitely go chat with him if you ever get the chance.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we had a great KomoriCon.
Yeah, we really did.
And yeah, we just wanted to kind of get our thoughts out so that probably we can look back and remember them, but mm-hmm. also.
So that we can share them with you.
Yeah. Yeah, before we go, just want another shout out to Waruida Show and the Angel's Egg episode that they had us on for. Go check that out either in our podcast feed, Anime is Lit, or at Waruida Show. Go listen to that episode if you haven't. But also just like thank you to the Subtle Doctor for having us do that episode with him, and also just like being a huge reason for why we were interested in Amano in the first place and for why we had such an experience with his art before this panel.
Yeah, honestly, we would not have watched Angel's Egg without subs.
Not in the recent present,
mm-hmm.
at any rate. And before we head out, if you want to get a hold of us, we're at AnimeIsLitPod on Twitter. Also, AnimeIsLitPod@gmail.com if you want to send us longer stuff. And don't forget to subscribe. And yeah, just talk to us about anything. Ask us about the convention. Talk to us about anime. And yeah, thanks for listening to our little KomoriCon bonus episode.
Go out, create your things, take care of yourselves.
Yeah, make art, enjoy your art, and don't be ashamed to enjoy the things you enjoy.
Yeah.
Take care of yourselves.
Bye.